Welcome into the Sports Objective, a very special night. There's with all the craziness going on in the world, which we're not going to touch tonight, obviously, and COVID-19 in Washington. It's great to have an escape. And with us right now, my brothers from a different mother, and that would be Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well, guys. How are y'all?
Doing great.
All
Kyle
right.
Barber, how are you, man?
What's going on, Dave? Bubba, coaches, doing as well as can be.
Very
All
good.
right, we're
Very
very
good.
excited. We've got the big matchup on Monday night, Ohio State and Alabama. And Bubba, very excited to have two of our favorite coaches to talk about football, life, whatever they want to talk about. Anytime they want to come on the show, they're always welcome.
Absolutely, Dave. We've had these guys on multiple times in the past, and it was a no-brainer to have them back on as we talk about the college football playoff championship game between Alabama and Ohio State, and that we hope will be next Monday, the 11th. And without any further ado, welcome back in a couple of guys that have nearly 80 years of experience between them, Rick Minner and Ricky Bussell. Guys, how are you?
Doing great, doing thank good. You.
Well, at least, guys, yesterday I had a coworker to ask me if I turned 60 yet. So, and I'm only 47. So, so it can always be worse is my point. But anyway, coaches, welcome in. So glad to have you. I can't believe, first thing, I knew that you guys were coming on. So one of the things I thought about today, aren't we just glad that we're going to have a national championship game that we're going to be able to, if it's Monday night, or I assume it'll be Monday night, Coach Minner. Definitely, I'm just happy the fact that we have. I want to get both of your reactions to the fact that it's nice to know that we're going to have Alabama, Ohio State instead of a canceled football season.
Well, you know, it's been a long grind, I'm sure, for all these players and coaches, dating all the way back to May and June when the powers that be had to start making some decisions. And they kind of put the players out there around June the 6th, if I'm correct on that. They started doing, you know, summer practices. And then, you know, some leagues by August made decisions that were challenging and difficult for the players. And that is, we were not going to play. Big Ten was first, then he went to Pac-12, right on down the line. And for us to be here now, of course, the SEC, ACC stood fast, and they got it going, and everybody else followed suit, the Big 12. And for us to finally be here at the eve of this game on Monday night is quite an accomplishment, because I really doubted it as just a lay person, not a doctor, but a lay person, thinking that there'd be a ton of more issues perhaps than what it turned out to be. And we're just thankful that all the kids and the coaches got here, most of them very safely, and we're looking forward to a great ball game on Monday night.
Coach Bussell, what are your thoughts on that, about as far as the season? I really was worried that we would not have one.
No, I'm the same way. And trust me, there's nothing in the old playbook or the head coach's manual to figure all this out. And I think, you know, at some point, you know, people thought this group was wrong, this group was right, all that. But to be where we are right now, and obviously we had some games canceled and so forth, I'd have lost money. But I'd bet early we wouldn't have had anything.
Guys, we get Alabama and Ohio State. You know, I think some people you hear about Alabama fatigue and Clemson fatigue, and of course you get a traditional blue blood in there with Ohio State. It's not Alabama Clemson, but it's Alabama Ohio State. Do you think? I hate to say, do you think the right two teams playing for the national championship because they won their playoff games? But, you know, I'm always a proponent. I think we should go to 8 with the playoffs. I think Oklahoma, for example, right now is playing as good a football as anybody. But what do you think of these two teams, Ohio State and Alabama? And did you ever think you'd see a team play seven ball games and then a national championship game?
Well, if you're going to pick the four teams you picked, now you have the two better teams, obviously. There was arguments about who were the top four to begin with, whether it be enough games played, whether it be a talented A&M team, whether it be a come-on-late Ohio State team, whether it be a group of five Cincinnati team. There were some good choices out there. I think all in all, the committee probably got it right. And if they did with those four, then now you've definitely got the two best teams. And I think this was going to be a classic matchup like it was, I want to say, about 4 or 5 years ago when those guys played in that first round game, and I think Ohio State beat them. I don't think Ohio State's a good matchup for Alabama. I really don't. They play a style of physicality in the trenches that can match Alabama's and surpass it. You know, it's going to be one out there on the flank, you know, with Devontae and those kind of guys making the X plays and the explosives. But I don't think Alabama's overly looking forward to playing Ohio State.
Coach Bustle, have you ever seen a quarterback have a better performance than that kid did for Ohio State the other night in such a big spotlight?
Well, I just think in the type of game that it was, I mean, he rose to the occasion, and I really thought he was out, going to be out of the game. Because when last time, of course, it's been a long time, but last time I took a hit around that hip, I ended up with a hip point. and that's nothing to joke about, man. That thing's a painful thing, and that's what I was afraid that he had, and even the way he walked around the field. But, you know, I think they got better medicines today than when Rick and I played back there sometime. But I just thought he played and he was determined, I think just tremendously motivated. I think the team gathered around him, you know, on both sides of the ball. And I just, you know, he had him a heck of a night.
Yeah, no doubt. As two former head coaches, you know, you guys coached some big games. You know, I know you coached Bustle, coached in national championship games. I was coordinator for Virginia Tech. Obviously Saban's been here. You know, he's done it a million times. How much of an advantage do you guys, you know, think that is for Coach Saban over Ohio State's head coach?
Ryan Day.
Yeah, Ryan Day. Mm-hmm. How much of an advantage do you think that is, you know, that Saban has done this before? He knows the routine. He's been in this kind of pressure situation before.
I think it's probably a little bit of an advantage because I think he knows how to get his team ready and the procedures and the practices. And, you know, even when we played in the national championship, you know, we didn't change anything. We still had certain days were run days, and some days were play action and run days. And you keep things as normal as you can, but we all know it's not normal. But, you know, I would think him being there as many times, he knows how to prepare his team to play in this type of game.
You know, the one thing I would say is I totally agree with Rick that experience does many times win off in the end. And I believe that I believe that was the exact case last year. In that fourth quarter, I think Dabo's experience being in that big game probably showed on Ryan Day and even Justin Fields. You know, Trevor had been there, Dabo had been there, Clemson Tigers had been there, and Ohio State had not been with that particular group in that semifinal game. And I just believe that, you know, the eyes got big and the lights and the headlights got too bright. Right there in those final closing moments, I think experience really, or inexperience, you know, perhaps showed. They didn't take, I think it was a field goal or a two-point play when they should have, which was common sense. I just think it was a little bit in the moment. So having said that, I think Ryan is the guy that's going to have grown a lot over this last 12 months. Now, Nick is the master. I'm a big Nick fan. Man, he's going for number 7. But I do think Ryan closed that gap, perhaps, having learned a few hard lessons after last year. And I think Ryan will be a whole lot better when the lights come on this time.
Are you surprised, either one of you, that there has been absolutely no drop-off for Ohio State after Meyer, you know, retired or whatever you want to call it? I you know, Coach Day, you know, he's a good coach, but he was inexperienced as a head coach. When he took over, I honestly didn't know if he'd be able to keep it going at the level Urban Meyer had got it to. Are you guys surprised he's just kept it rolling?
Well, I'm not myself because I officed next to Ryan Day in Philadelphia in 2015. All right. He was coming out of Boston College, been a successful offense coordinator at Temple on up to BC. We finally got him to be our quarterback coach with the Philadelphia Eagles. And I remember the first few times I met this guy, I went straight to Chip Kelly, and said, "Where in the world did you get this guy? He is off the chart, intellectual, high IQ, bright-eyed guy, and he's sharp as ever." Now, he ran that gamut with us, went to San Francisco, came to Ohio State, He GA'd under Urban. So now, having said all that, he's done a great job, just like Lincoln Riley's done a great job taking over for Stoops. The real test for Ryan in terms of judgment of the program long term will be even another year or two from now. Once all the kids are gone, maybe he loses some support staff here and there. Got to keep building his own staff, discipline, weight room, recruiting. But to this point, I would say, no, I'm not surprised at all by what he's done. He's a total clone of Urban. He's been around him before. They're just keeping that machine rolling as it is right now.
And for me, I don't know Ryan, but I'm glad to hear Rick talk about him because, you know, that's a great coaching job. And it would really take a big force to probably screw it up. So obviously, you know, he had the talent to do that. And I think that's a program, but I think, you know, you still got to hustle just like everybody else and recruit the guys in there. And like Rick said, as, you know, another couple of years when he's kind of got his own bunch in there is when it's going to show up the greatest, I think.
Coaches, I want to ask you something real quick. Bubba, and I'll let you do. I'll ask them next. But speaking of coaching jobs, not to screw up, nice segue. We'll get back to the championship game in just a second. Coach Minter, we were talking about it before pre-show. What do they have to do down in Texas there in Austin? I mean, you know, they've got more money than God. They've got more money than any other program in the country. And I was telling Coach Minter, I think with East Carolina, if we had that much money, we'd do even worse because you got all these buyouts and we can buy the coach out because we have so much money. But I'm just wondering, what does it take for Texas to be in the playoffs, so to speak?
I tell you what they're going to have to do. I think they made a good hire, but I thought so 4 years ago also. I really was a believer in Tom Herman, that he was a good fit for that program. He had GA'd there. He had grown up in Texas. And what he had done at Houston, you know, getting it up to 12-0, breaking the glass ceiling for the group of five. I thought he was the right man for the job. As it turned out, he was not. But there's an extremely high standard down there in Texas. And the powers that be say we deserve every bit of opportunity to be great like A&M went out and paid for it with Jimbo. Exactly what Lincoln Riley's showing that he's able to do up in Oklahoma, being the in the playoffs all 4 years and up until this year, I should say. So they have a standard. Do they have money? Sure, but money doesn't buy success. It gets you a good coach for the, you know, right off the bat, but it doesn't buy you success. If there's an opportunity for Shark to get the job done there, I think he can get it done. It'll be a Nick Saban blueprint sprinkled in with his own expertise. They'll recruit well. There'll be kids around that state that's kind of a 7-on-7 type state right now that wants to go and throw the ball around. They see what Alabama's doing on offense. But they're going to have to get to where they beat Oklahoma on a regular basis for them to get into the national playoff talk, because that's what Oklahoma has done, is beaten Texas quite a few times over these last 4 or 5 years.
Coach Minter, we'll get back to the national championship game here in a minute, but I want to talk about another job, but we're going to talk about coaching carousel. When were you at Marshall? Were you at Marshall under Doc, or what was it under the previous coach?
I was under previous coach Mark Snyder. And okay, I was there 08-09, which turned out to be Mark's last 2 years. Our final year there, which was 09, we went 6-6. That was just enough to get Mark fired because he'd been there for 5 total years already. And then I took the team over as an interim. We went to a bowl game. We won that bowl game. By that time, they had named Doc Holliday.
That's right.
And he has done an outstanding job there. It's ironic. I don't know if you guys knew this. I spent for 10 weeks in Hattiesburg. Well, yeah, we talked once when I was in Hattiesburg this fall from October to the mid-December. But the guys on that Hattiesburg staff down there are connected to Marshall, right? Because there is a lot of connection between Jay Hobson and Southern Miss and Marshall, et cetera. They told me from the beginning of the time I was there that Doc would not be back. And I said, what? I mean, the guys only average about 9 or 10 wins every year. And he wins the league, seemed like every other year. And he's done a tremendous job there. He's a master recruiter. He's done a great job. They put a good team on the field. And it's a, you know, but we know there's other extenuated circumstances. And the knock was they weren't raising any money. They're a cash poor program. People's skills got involved. And so somehow they just decided not to renew the contract. But you talking about a guy that has put up a resume over 10 years now. That he's done a tremendous job there. And I just texted him yesterday, and Doc and I don't know each other all that well, but just as one former guy to another former guy with a job well done, I said, Doc, you just did a hell of a job up there, and I congratulate you. Sorry what happens, but as we know, crap happens in this business. It's not always justified.
Yeah, I don't – that really came as a shock to me, and the fact that you're saying that the staff at USM was saying it was going to happen back when it looked like they were going to win the league. I know they lost the last three in a row, including their bowl. But, you know, Mike Hamrick, their AD, you know, supposedly wanted to extend his contract, and the board of trustees wouldn't approve it.
Right, and, that's the rumor,
It is crazy that, you know, the fan base, for whatever reason, weren't embracing him. I mean, I know they, you know, back when Pruitt was there, they were winning the MAC every year and FCS or 1AA national championships before going to the MAC. And, you know, but when you look at today, modern college football and playing in Conference USA versus 1AA or the MAC, and I think Doc Holliday's success has been somewhat comparable to Bob Pruitt's. And
absolutely.
It shocks me that they fired him. I'm sure Doc's going to land on his feet. I would imagine a lot of ACC schools, because his recruiting ability in that area, are going to be contacting him about a position coach. But I'm shocked by it. Coach Bussell, did you have a relationship with Doc Holliday at all?
Well, I knew him a little bit because we both recruited South Florida a lot when I was at Virginia Tech. And he's a good guy. you know, I mean, you know, it's in the end of these daggum hit jobs. Sometimes you got to please the right people, you know. And sometimes I think, you know, even though that you win, you do, you know, you hurt somebody's feeling. It's a, you know, a supporter guy or whatever. But, you know, and I've said this for some years. I said, you know, this is a great profession we went, but it sucks as a business. I mean, it's a great profession. I wouldn't do it over I'd do it all over again. Yeah. But the business side of it, it's crappy. And, and that's just kind of the way I looked at it for some years. And, you know, the good guys a lot of times finish last.
And you got to wonder what makes it even interesting for me is now with Hamrick, their AD. And, you know, believe me, we all know Mike Hamrick. He was the AD at East Carolina at one point, and no love lost between, you know, us and Mike Hamrick, to be honest. But it puts Mike in a weird situation now. He didn't want to fire the guy, was forced out. Now he's got to go make the hire. So be interesting to see how that dynamic works between him and the board and their chancellor.
It'll be definitely something to keep your eyes on, even for Mike himself. Again, according to the stories that were floating around, you know, it's like Rick said, you know, and we've been there. It's just sometimes the smaller the community, the less number of influentials there are, and they seem to be more powerful than they need to be at times. And if you don't please them, they're more easily offended. Doc's personality is one that he's a worker. He's a grinder, man. He loves to recruit, works his guys' butts off. Is he the smoozer that's going to go sit down at the corner bar and have a beer all the time? Probably not, because he's a pro. He's a professional football coach, and he got the production done on the field. And if that offended people, then, you know, so much to them, you know. But Bobby Pruitt, on the other hand, was the exact opposite. You know, he was a Barry Switzer of Huntington. You know, he could recruit. He could hire great coaches, but he knew how to smooze the people. And he became ingratiated there in Huntington. I mean, he's got a bar and restaurant, or used to have. I mean, it's just personality sometimes. It just rubs people the wrong way. But you talk about results, and I've been there. All jobs are challenging. And when that Marshall job is rolling, it is a fun, fun place to be in. It's a passionate town about that plane crash of 50, 60 years ago. And but I feel for Doc. We've all been there, and it's non-deserving whatsoever. But as Rick and I would tell you, there's nothing fair about the profession. We do it all over again.
No, yeah, you're right. It's funny how, you know, we had a beloved head coach here, Ruffin McNeil, that was kind of, you know, you talk about a small amount of people having too much influence. Right. You know, kind of part of the knock on Ruff was, you know, he treated people like me, you know, a nobody. the same way as he treated the big donors. He was nice to everybody, and somehow that rubbed people the wrong way.
Well, what I hear, Ruff's a nice guy. Like Rick said, sometimes nice guys finish last.
Yeah. And, you know, whoever steps into that job, there's always somebody that will take it. But they're going to have
absolutely.
To, they better come in with their eyes wide open. But there's somebody's going to take it.
No doubt about it. Guys, speaking of another coaching, since we're on the subject of coaching carousel and the kind of one that's another one to shake your head. You guys have been around the business. What about, we know about the fans in Auburn, but that Auburn situation, not that I'm surprised, but then again, I thought that Coach Malzahn was a good coach. And I understand you got the guys there in Tuscaloosa, what they're doing in Alabama, but Auburn, I just, that's another one that it feels like it's a coaching change just for a change.
Well, if you know anything about what goes on at Auburn, there's not very many decisions made at the presidential and even the AD level there. There's a group of guys, you know, out back that somewhat control most of the dealings that go on at Auburn. Always have, it seems like, all the way back to Coach Dye and the great job he did there. You know, they ran Tommy out of there after a while. Mm-hmm. And you know, like you say, that's maybe a different group in Huntington, but there was a group in Auburn that pretty much controls that thing. I don't think they've ever, for some reason, whether it's Gus didn't find himself rubbing shoulders with those guys over there in the back shop, but they didn't like him from the beginning, and I don't know why. Gus and I happen to be both Henderson State graduates over in Arkansas. I don't know Gus all that well, but he's a good man and a hard worker. Has come up the hard way through the high school ranks. And he just, you know, he's just out for the kids and does all that good stuff. And he goes down there, wins a national title as a coordinator, comes back, and does a good, solid job as a head coach. Good enough for them to give him a 7-year, $50 million deal. But you knew the minute they signed that darn thing, how long was that going to last? And it didn't last very long. Now, he's walking away with a nice parting gift. But
but I didn't quite hang in there long enough.
You know, everybody says what I don't like about coaches being hired and fired, the fans' reaction. They said, oh, well, at least he's got a lot of money. You know, we didn't get into this game to coach for money. Yeah. And there's guys that make a lot now. I'm all happy for them and everything. But when you're a head coach, that's been your goal. That's been your life's work to become that head coach. And when you no longer get to be that head coach, your life changes. I call it the view, that your view of everything changes. And it doesn't have anything to do with money. Yeah, he'll have a lot of nice Christmases with the parting gift, but his life is no longer the same because he's not the head coach, and someone took that opportunity away from him. And I, just like Doc, you hope Gus Malzahn lands on his feet, gets another job and another program opportunity, because he'll win wherever he goes. He is a winning coach.
Well, what I find interesting about the Auburn situation is, and it's nothing against Coach Harrison, you know, he did a nice job at Arkansas State, and then he kept Boise State rolling. But I mean, I don't look at Coach Harrison and think, wow, he's an upgrade from Gus Malzahn. I mean, that's what, you know, to me, if you're going to make a change, like getting rid of a guy as successful as Gus, you need to make sure you got a wow hire. And I don't know how Auburn fans feel, but to me, I was like, well, okay, it's, you hired another coach.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I'm not going to judge. School, yeah, go ahead, Rick.
Sometimes a school gets that reputation of it's not good enough, and they don't want to get turned down by too many people. They all got their pride sitting out there in front of them, and it happens too often.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about Tennessee.
The other thing too is it always the coach that makes the job? Or does the job help make the coach? You know, not every place is equal. Not every place has an opportunity to win on a successful basis. I can tell you this right now with Rick sitting here. If Frank Beamer would have been a head coach today, he'd have never made it. He'd have never made it because it took patience for that job. Rick, yeah. You tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I think about the sixth year, did it really kick in with the foundation they laid and the recruiting they did. And then from 6 years on to the next, until Frank retired, it was as good a place and good a job and as tough a team to play as anybody. So, yeah, the coach makes the job, but sometimes the job helps make the coach. The when it's perfect is when everybody's on the same page and they give guys time and they give them patience to develop their culture and what they're trying to get done. And that's what happened at Va Tech. It turned into a national power. And there's a lot of good jobs out there like that, just waiting for the right, you know, touch by the new coach.
Yeah, Coach Manor, what you're saying, recently I heard Coach Beamer when Shane got the job down at South Carolina, and we had Coach Bussell on to talk about that several weeks ago. But Gamecock Central, I believe that's the Rivals affiliate for South Carolina. But anyway, they had an interview of about 20 or 25 minutes with Frank Beamer, and Coach Beamer was just talking about, he said the very thing that you said. He said you're not going to get to year seven now.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, these schools, they're making so much money these days, a lot of those type schools. And, I mean, how they pay people off like they do, I don't know. You know, so, I mean, it's a you know, you can get you a good contract, but, you know, you may not be there at the end of it if you don't win games.
But, guys, go ahead, Kyle.
No, go ahead. We got some lag there. You were before me. Go ahead.
No, Kyle, here just a few minutes ago, you referenced the success that Coach Minner and Coach Bussell had, you know, competing for national championships. Coach Bussell at Virginia Tech, playing for one in the Sugar Bowl back in 99 with Michael Vick. And then, you know, Coach Minner is the defense coordinator at Notre Dame. Coach Minner, I wanted to ask you about that. And back in 93, when you guys lost the heartbreaker at home, won the game at home against Florida State, then lost a heartbreaker at home to Boston College after that, and then were knocked out of the national championship picture and finished second after you're winning the Cotton Bowl. Talk about that and how nice it had been to have the college football playoff back then.
Well, even if the BCS would have been in play back then, we'd have probably played Florida State again. But the playoffs, we'd have definitely been in the playoffs. What really disappointed all of us back then was the fact we won a game at home against, the game of the century, they called it back then. Next week we get upset at home in a final kick of the game. And simultaneously on the same Saturday, Florida State goes down to NC State and wins like 62-0 or something like that, puts a real butt whipping on the Wolfpack. So it kind of kept everybody's frame of mind. But we would have thought we go down and play the A&M in the Cotton Bowl, second year in a row we played them, and it kind of was a so-so game. And what we needed to happen that year was for Florida State to go to the Orange Bowl and barely win, us go to the Cotton Bowl and try to win big and let the chips fall where they were. And that's what happened. And what we would have thought would have occurred, and it kind of shows you where coaches' emotions are sometimes. We thought the press, back then they awarded the two trophies, so the press was going to give Bobby Bowden his title, just kind of his turn, so to speak. And when the coaches went to vote that next morning, and when they saw us have identical records and we beat Florida State head-to-head, we were so desperately wanting the coaches' poll. And therefore, rightfully, it would have been a split national championship, which would have been only fair. But it did happen. All the coaches voted against Lou and Notre Dame and gave it to Bobby, and so we were second. That's the way that one went, you know.
Coach Minner, how was it for you? I know, as you know, being an East Carolina guy here, I was rooting for Cincinnati hard to beat Georgia in the Peach Bowl. I know you coached Cincinnati for a long time.
Yeah.
Your former players, you know, Gaduli's on staff there. How was that for you watching that the other day? I had a knot in my stomach. I was almost as bad as watching an East Carolina game, just hoping my conference brethren would beat the big bad SEC team. And unfortunately fell 1 point short, and a lot of ifs and whats and coulds and woulds. I told Bubba in the beginning of the fourth quarter or late third quarter, I said, I wouldn't throw another pass. I said, I believe if they don't turn it over. I believe if they don't turn it over, that I don't think Georgia can score on them two more times. And sure enough, he threw a pick six. And
I tell you what, it was. I've grown close to that program more so in the last few years than more recently after I was let go. So I've become fans and friends of Luke Fickell and Marcus Freeman and that entire staff up there, particularly Gino's on the staff, John Tenuta's on the staff, a bunch of other good guys are up there. So I've really followed them with great interest. And when they got the bid to play Georgia, you know, we've all played SEC games. You knew they were up against it a little bit, but you knew their defense would give them a chance to hang in there and play. And the Georgia offense was nothing, you know, overwhelming. And you had to give a crap factor by the SEC, which happens to them occasionally. So the stage was set for UC to go down there and pull this thing off. And for 3.5 quarters, they did. But I'm like you. I thought clock mismanagement in the closing minutes of the game really, really hurt them. I'd have never thrown the ball on 3rd and 2 on the final drive of the game for Cincinnati. Punt the ball away, use up 40 more seconds, and they'd have never had time to do what they did, which was kick the game-winning field goal. You know, happy for them, yeah. Disappointed for them, more so. And I think so many times those decisions by coaches, and I know we can second-guess ourselves and or our peers, but they gave it a great effort. It was a valiant effort, great showing, because they weren't just playing for UC. They were playing for all the group of five schools out there that are trying to break that ceiling to get into the argument of deserving to play in the playoffs, you know, down the road. So there was more than just, you know, a Cincinnati win riding on that thing. There was a lot of national implications riding on it. But I thought clock mismanagement really hurt them in the final analysis and some play calling choices. But my heart bled with them all the way.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I go back to 1-18 playoff with your five Power Five champions, your highest ranked team from the group of five, and then two at largest. That would be 8 teams. And what if that Georgia Cincinnati game was a playoff game? That would have been a heck of a playoff game.
Oh, heck yeah. So I understand why they did not. I didn't like the fact that whenever they missed some games due to COVID, they kept falling in the standings by not playing. And the Ohio State team stayed right where they were. And then, of course, they got in at 6. So you can argue those types of things. But does the American Conference play the strength level of the SEC and the ACC and the Big Ten every, you know, every week? No, they really don't. They can only play the teams put on their schedule. And Cincinnati played extremely well all year. It was an undefeated season going into the bowl game. They did a great show in the bowl game and just came within seconds of winning that darn thing.
No, no doubt. And I'm like you. I don't like that they, you know, fought, you know, they missed 2 games because of COVID. And they just kept falling in the polls while Ohio State kept rising. But it is what it is. That's the plight of a so-called group of five team. Coach Bustle, I wanted to ask you, we mentioned Shane Beamer being at South Carolina earlier. What do you think so far about the staff he's putting together? I was a little surprised to hear him retain Coach Bobo. Not that Coach Bobo is not a great offensive coach, because he is, and very experienced, but I kind of thought that he may want to be bringing in a Lincoln Riley style offense. That was the rumor early on. Were you surprised to see him retain Coach Bobo?
I was. I mean, I didn't know who he might bring in, but I kind of felt like Shane being in that offense and seeing the success and that they had, that he would maybe try to do something like that. But, you know, I mean, of course, I live here in Athens, and honestly, it's about 50-50 on Bobo. I don't know him. They were, you know, glad when he got here and glad when he left. But I've been on the end of that one, too. So, you know, it was – I don't know much about him. You know, they weren't very good last year. And honestly, Rick may agree or disagree, but, you know, at South Carolina, they're paying off a lot of people, paying coaches a bunch of money that they're letting go. And I don't know if that saved them any money or not. I don't, you never know. But sometimes they get involved with who you want to hire.
Yeah, if they were going to retain Coach Bobo, I do think it's good that they were able to, you know, bring in Will Friend, the offensive line coach from Tennessee, with him having experience together not only at the University of Georgia, but then also at Colorado State as well.
Right. Yeah, I wish Shane the best. I don't know who all we've hired so far. I've known Bobo and Friend, and I think he's kept running back coach. I just hope he does. It has a good year. South Carolina's a tough job. You know, Rick knows that too. And,
yeah.
I played at Clemson and all that stuff, but I coached him over Brad Scott came in and ran the offense for him there. But I used to pass that school in that stadium every time I'd come from Blacksburg, we'd go around that loop around there and go by the stadium. And I'd always sit there and think, or even tell my wife, that is just a hard job right there. And I wish Shane the best. And I'm never going to put my finger on it because they got money. They support the school. But, you know, they just have a tough time staying at a level of the SEC.
It is a tough job. You know, I was talking to my son about it the other day, being in the SEC. I've coached there a couple of times, you know, Kentucky, South Carolina. They're about the same. There's a pecking order in the SEC. And, you know, when you're in that East, typically you're talking about Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, although they've given people an opportunity to crack it. And then all of a sudden, Stoops has done a great job at Kentucky, getting that thing up to 9-10. Steve did a good job there. Lou had some moments. Steve Spurrier had some moments. Will never really got it going. But it's a tough job. It's just that middle of the road job where your aspirations are 9-10, and yet the reality is probably more like 6, 7, and 8 on a good year. But sometimes the fans don't want to. They don't want to hear that. You know, they get spoiled by their own successes sometimes.
Yeah, and for the East Carolina fans watching, as we do originate out of Greenville, South Carolina comes to Greenville to Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. Game number 2 of the 2021 season, Shane Beamer's second game as head coach. And Coach Mike Houston returns all but 2 starters as he hits into year number 3, coming off blowout wins with SMU and Temple to close the 2020 season. So I'm not calling for the upset. I'm just pointing it out.
And very quickly, I'm telling you. Yeah, that's what you guys do. Y'all can call it any way you want.
I mean, and Kyle, another scheduling note as far as South Carolina, the Pirates were obviously supposed to play South Carolina in 2020, and we did not with everything that's going on. So that game has been rescheduled for 2027. So you know, getting back to South Carolina staff, we talked about retaining Coach Bobo. And, yeah, a lot of times you'll see one or two guys retained. But Coach Beamer decided to retain 4 in addition to Mike Bobo, a retained defensive line coach Tracy Rocker, outside backers coach Mike Peterson, running back coach Dez Kitchens, who was he played in South Carolina at Furman University and then has done a solid job on wherever he's coached.
You know, the one thing I would say about Shane, and certainly Rick knows him a lot better than I do, but whenever you go in and take a job, the natural tendency that everybody thinks you ought to do is clean house, get rid of everybody, and start over. And it kind of attributes to him, to be honest with you, that he's able to go in there and either had pre-existing friendships or just literally like man to man, went down there and sat down and talked to these guys and found out that, you know, their allegiance could easily turn right to Shane Beamer and didn't have to stay with Will Muschamp, you know, because we're all chameleons. We can all change colors in a heartbeat. But for him to reach out and keep 4 guys really shows me a little bit more about Shane than on the positive side, that he listened to people or he interviewed them and gave them a chance. And in the process, might have saved the school a little bit of money. That's just a sidebar. But Tracy was on my staff at Cincinnati for 1 year. He's a heck of a guy. He's an Outland Trophy winner down at Auburn. He knows the SEC. I mean, you just start with the D-line coach, okay? You get rid of that guy. All right, so you want to find you a real tough hombre who is a minority coach and can coach D-line. Or you just push one out the door. Who are you going to go find better than Tracy Rocker? You know, so you have to almost look at it that way. There's some good coaches there in South Carolina. Give Will credit. He hired good coaches. And Shane just was the beneficiary, decided to keep some of them. I don't know Mike Bobo very well. But, and, you know, he'll be more critical of that hire than any of the other hires, you know, terms of the fan interest. But you give Shane credit for going in there and evaluating and talking to him and maybe giving some of those guys a chance to just stay right there where they were and didn't have to have them uproot their families and everything else.
Shows a lack of ego.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know it will get off South Carolina, but I don't know if they ever hired their defensive coordinator. I know at one point he was interviewing, oh God, I'm terrible with names, guys. This is a big problem of mine. Vanderbilt.
Derek Mason.
Yeah, Coach Mason from Vandy. Yeah. which I thought would have been a great hire. What a great defensive mind. I don't know that he ever got it done. Do you know, Bubba?
No, no one has been named, and I have not seen that Derek Mason is not in the running by any means. So I mean, that could still happen. And, you know, kind of going back to what Coach Manning was saying, when I brought that up, I wasn't necessarily saying that was a negative by any means, and time will tell. But kudos to Shane. Obviously, nobody wants to have success any more than him going in there and taking a head job. Like Kyle said, putting his being humble enough to have those conversations and not making change for the sake of change.
Well, I just got a feeling if he's any, and Rick, you can speak to this, but yeah. If Shane Beamer's anything like his dad, he's going to be thoughtful. He's going to be thorough in this process. He's going to be detailed. He's been around some other people since being around his dad, and that's only helped. My son was working for me. Now he's working here with the Ravens in Baltimore. So it's good that our kids branch out and find all new ways of doing things and get a breath of fresh air. I think he was with Steve down there first, and then he ends up over at Oklahoma. So he's been exposed to a lot of good football since Vautech days. Sure. And puts all that together, makes up his repertoire of things that all of us as young head coaches say we always wanted to do if we became head coaches. And he'll have a great emphasis on special teams, which got Vautech going as quick as any team in the country. Whenever you can carry into a ball game, you always say as an old statement, you want to dominate two phases of every game, you know, try to chance win. And if you can just put it in your hip pocket that you're going to win the special teams every game, that's a big advantage for you. Then you hope that your O or your D carries the other side if need be. But I think that's going to be a fun staff to watch develop. Are they up against it just naturally with the pulse of the SEC East? Yeah, they are. But, you know, what made all those teams get challenged this year was they played 10 games, and every darn one of those suckers were SEC football games.
Yeah.
You know? So you wonder why Vandy goes 0-10. You wonder why Will can't win enough games because they don't get those other 2, 3, 4 games that wise scheduling needs to take place so they have a chance to sustain their program.
Yeah, no doubt.
Kind of shifting gears to some of the other issues with college football earlier when we were talking about that Texas job. You were talking about how in this day and age of college football, you know, how you have to be player friendly and, have the standards that you need to have as a program, but at the same time, be a player's coach to an extent and have that rapport. So we just talk about some of the things, such as, like the early signing day and then also the potential, to transfer without sitting out. And what are your thoughts on some of those things?
You know, there's some things coming along in college football where, quite honestly, I'm not all that sad. I'm not going to be a big part of it. It doesn't appear as I'm kind of sitting more on the outside than on the inside right now. This one-time transfer thing is not a good rule in my estimation. That's just my opinion. You work hard to get kids to commit and stay in your program. Occasionally, you don't save them all. They have a chance to go other places, but they have to pay a price. They have to go somewhere. They have to sit out, have to establish themselves. I'm not for an open-door revolving policy that NCAA basketball is turning into, and that's all football is going to turn into is a free-for-all. There's going to be poaching going on all over the place. When a school loses a marquee guy, and I feel for the mid-majors, not necessarily the big boys, but the mid-majors. Yeah. If they get a hotshot guy going, he's going into his third or fourth year, and he's really developed, late bloomer, however you want to call those developmental players that's begun to shine, they're going to end up at these big programs because they're going to, deservedly, they want a shot at their day in the sun and level of competition to see if they can't survive at the biggest level out there. That's fine. But in the old days, you would say, well, if you want to transfer, then you got to go sit out a year, establish yourself, et cetera. Now you can just go at the drop of a hat. Then what does that program do? Everybody's going to start poaching everybody. See exactly what goes on in recruiting before the signing date even occurs. Now, once you get them and develop them, it's going to be the same thing all over. So that part of it I don't like. I don't know what's about to take place with this financial implication of this image and likeness. I think that's going to be a huge headache for all programs. It's going to be legalized cheating at its best. It's going to become professionalized sports. It's not so much that you're putting money in the hands of players, which I'm for doing. I am for adding more money to the hands of players, but it needs to be all equal, like it has been so far. The latest move 6-8 years ago was when they could do the cost of attendance, get those stipend checks up there pretty good. You know, a kid right now can make about 10 grand a year with his Pell Grant, with his cost of education. That's $1,000 a month. Now, if a college kid can't make it on $1,000 a month, okay, he's hurting. And but if you start adding money under the table, or it really won't be under the table anymore, be right out front. But it's going to destroy the locker room. When you start getting professional-like money given to certain aspects of your team, it's going to destroy the morale of your team from within. And you think it's a hard time for pros to handle that sometimes. Wait till it's an 18 to 22-year-old guy trying to handle the pressures of he being the chosen one. He's got to go down to the car dealership, and he's got to cut a deal. So all this kind of stuff I don't think I'm going to miss. These are new challenges.
Well, I'm going to go back to the transfer rule again, because I was at Lafayette, Louisiana for 9 seasons. And, you know, we did develop some kids, the kids that went to the NFL. You know, and those guys, we have made it so easy for them guys to come try out. It's almost what they're doing. They're trying you out. You know, when you sign, you know, and you develop them, and they can leave with these one-year wonders can come into the school and they don't like something, and they want to transfer to somebody else that was recruiting them. You know, I just don't think it's fair. I think it's bad. And, you know, but I know at Lafayette, if we got into some guys that were sophomores, juniors, you know, you'd hear them. You know, and I've heard them actually say, you know, if I was this size when I was in high school, I'd have been on the phone. I'd have been on the phone. But in fact, them old boys are leaving. You know, the ones we, you know, the type of kids we had at Lafayette, they developed into something really, really good, really special. I mean, they were some great kids and all that stuff, but they weren't playing for the Gippers.
No, I'm with you both. I think it's a terrible rule. I think Coach Minter, you nailed it on the head with the poaching. You know, you take a kid, I'll give you an example. East Carolina had a freshman running back this year, Roger Harris, who just lit it up, had several hundred-yard games in a row, came out of nowhere. He's from South Carolina. Now, you know, what if that rule was in place this year and the Gamecocks needed a running back? And by the same token, the other way around. What if you're the second string quarterback at South Carolina, and you know East Carolina needs a starter next year, and you know you're going to be riding the bench with the Gamecocks? Well, I'll just go ahead and transfer to East Carolina and be the starter. So I think you have guys that'll be studs, you know, at the Group of Five level that'll get poached by Power Five teams, and then the guys who are second and third string at some of these Power Five schools will transfer to Group of Five schools to get playing time right away. So I think it's going to be a mess.
We've made it so easy for them to do it. I mean, it's so easy to do that. So they can come with you, and if they don't like you after 3 months, 4 months, or they don't like what's going on, it's too easy. It's just easy. That's my feeling on it anyway.
Yeah, Coach Bustle, I'm just talking about the ease of it, and I'll leave the player's name out of it, but the Pirates this year, I thought about this since your comment, but also what Kyle was saying, of course, Rajay Harris, the star freshman running back for East Carolina. You had a grad transfer running back coming in from the University of Arkansas, and you know, he saw what the deal was and the quality of Rajay Harris, as well as another freshman, Keaton Mitchell. And he opted out from there 3 or 4 games into the season. And now he is rejoining his former coach, Brett Bielema, you know, up at Illinois.
Yeah, so the kid's gone from Arkansas to East Carolina to Illinois in a year.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, Rick and I would say is, what are just some of the simple logistics? Let's say I got 3 or 4 stars that have emerged. And somewhere, I don't know what time of the year, whether it be at mid-year or during the summer, those 3 dudes just decide they got them a new home somewhere. Mm-hmm. What's my ability to replace those 3 guys? What are they going to do with the allowances of your 25 initials? Let's say I signed 25 during February. and over the summer, six guys decide to bolt out to some other program. Are we going to be allowed to go get six more guys? Because all we're going to do is start poaching someone else's roster down lower than us a little bit. Yeah. It's just going to turn into a mess and a free-for-all, and it's not going to be good for the sport. Not for competitive balance. Not, and it's where the rich will get richer, as they always say. It doesn't give the little man or a middle man a chance to develop anybody and keep a star. There's so much riding on things with kids getting to the highest level they can, try to get in the NFL, try to make money. There's just a lot of logistics. But a quick story, when I went down to Southern Miss again, I was just talking, and these coaches were telling me about these new rules. And they said one of the schools in the SEC, the minute they heard about this rule, about this one-time transfer, their personnel office, and all of them have big old personnel offices now, they all broke down every film of every group of five school and ranked and listed all the stars. In other words, if we had a chance at this school to grab that player, where is he and what would he play? Can he help us? Is he better than some of the guys we have? And there's better players at every school that's in the group of five. There's some player on a team that's better than an SEC player in a heartbeat. Okay, because they grow, they mature, they develop, however they got them. So you're going to find teams purposely scouting these guys out on other teams and then getting the word out through the street to say, hey, call them so-and-so because they want to talk to you about transferring. It's just going to become like a unrestricted free agent is all it is. And it's just going to spell trouble. The other question you mentioned earlier about, player friendly. I would never, I was a tough, hard-nosed coach. We demanded a lot of our, out of our players. But I just think players want a coach that'll be honest with them, that'll love them up, that'll work them hard, get the best out of them, be honest with them. I think the mistake so many young coaches today make is they all want to be friends with all these players, right? Instead of just being their leader and their mentor and the person who tells them the truth in life. And so I would work my team hard. Could you go back in time, be a little more player friendly, a little bit this, a little bit that, laugh a little bit. You got Twitter, you got to dance with them in the locker room when the game's over. You got to do all those things now that the young guys do. But I wouldn't trade much of what I did. We came along at the time I did. I had a fun career, and I don't have many regrets.
As we wind this down, a couple more questions, see where we let you gentlemen go. Coach Minner wanted to ask you two things about Southern Miss real fast since you were just there. One, how do you think Coach Will Hall will do? I like the hire. I thought he's a guy with a lot of ties to Mississippi. His daddy's a legendary high school football coach in Mississippi. Liked his success as a head coach at the Division II level. And I liked his offense at Tulane. We had to play against it the last couple of years. So I think it seems like a good fit. So how do you think he'll do there? And when you were in Hattiesburg, did you get a chance to enjoy any Lisa's barbecue?
No, I'd missed out on the barbecue there. I went to the Crescent Grill all the time, which is a famous grill. Got that Cajun connected food and everything. But I do think Will is a good hire there. I really do. I had a chance to say hello to him in our little five-minute exchange. He is all offensive. They have a great system. It's ironic. I'm in Baltimore right now visiting my children. The Ravens brought Will Hall up to visit their staff 2 years ago. They were picking out three or four of the better young minds in the college game on how they were utilizing RPOs and running their modern-day college offenses. And, of course, Giro up here, Greg Roman, and all those guys with Lamar Jackson right now trying to, build their offensive style. They brought Will up here. He was one of those three or four guys they chose to come and say, come on up here. We want to pick your brain. And they did that. So it kind of shows you the respect he had around the country. He was a great Division II coach, two different stops, did a nice little stop over at Memphis and went down to Tulane and was a top 10 offense for 1 year. Then they slipped back a little bit this year. But like you said, with his personal background growing up right there in Mississippi, his dad's still a Hall of Fame coach down in Mississippi. His ability to recruit, what little I was around him, his ability to relate and communicate. I think he'll do a great job. It'll get down to what kind of guys can they get on defense to keep that great defensive tradition going that Southern Miss has always had.
And no doubt. And Coach Bustle, I wanted to ask you, Lafayette, you were there for, you know, several years as head coach. Right. They got the thing, you know, kind of rolling here in recent years. You never know what you hear if it's true or not, but supposedly, and again, guys, I'm terrible with names. I promise you, I know my ball and I know my coaches. I just cannot remember people's names. It's a problem I have. Sometimes I forget my own name. But
Billy Napier.
Thank Billy you. Napier. Do you truthfully believe that he turned down the Auburn job?
I don't know who he's listening to. He may have an agent that said either try to convince him that wasn't a move for him, or I know Billy a little bit. I went down when he first took the job. He called me, and I flew down there and spent a couple of days with him, watching practice, with the film together. And I like him. He's very level-headed. He really wants to do well, which we all do. But just knowing him a little bit, it didn't shock me. But if you're just looking at the two jobs, money wise and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's not comparison. It wouldn't surprise me. I'll say it that way. Just, you know, knowing him like I do and spending some time with him, you know, he's at a place right now where he's winning a bunch of games. And trust me, winning's fun.
No doubt. I mean, he's got that thing rolling down Lafayette, co Sunbelt champions this year. And I just, you know, that was the story out there that they offered him the job and he turned it down. And I just, you know, I know money ain't everything, as Coach Minter was saying earlier, but man, that's a lot of money to turn down.
Yeah, a lot of money. They could have got me for a lot less.
But what about that very thing? It is a good job, but then it's a very tough job, a difficult job when you have Alabama winning all the time.
Yeah.
And so you think that you've got to compete with the folks down the street. So I can understand why he didn't take the job.
And Billy worked with Alabama, with Coach Saban. And I don't know that he knows that is an issue at Auburn. And I don't know if he thought that they could do well enough against Alabama year in and year out. He's a sharp guy. I don't know. That's for you guys to figure out.
not me for sure. That you know, like we were talking about earlier with different places, and maybe even say Tennessee, where there are a lot of places that think they should win a whole bunch of games. And there was one point, I guess it would be great before we let you guys go, to make, and that is they were talking about Notre Dame the other day. I was watching television, and about how Notre Dame, maybe Coach Minter, you can talk about this being there, but the Notre Dame when you were there and the Notre Dame now, as far as it seems like a lot of the programs, because of the big money, have caught up with Notre Dame, and they were talking about that. And with some of these schools, though, I guess they have the SEC money, and maybe that's why, but they had the old days when they won a national championship, Texas, Tennessee, we're talking about. And now there are a lot of people, like you were talking about earlier in the show, with Kentucky's good now. You know, there's a lot of schools that are good now that were mediocre or not so good, and they were very good, and that's why they won. And now there's a whole bunch of teams that are really good.
I'll tell you this. The one thing that's given everybody an opportunity in college football to win and level the playing field is the spread offense and the option game and the athletic quarterback. They've all equalized the field. But as far as Notre Dame goes, Notre Dame was in a unique period of time around that 87 to 93, 94 period. And they had a guy running the personnel office really ahead of his time back in those days to what people were doing. And that was Vinny Serrata. If anybody knows anything about Vinny did a great job being a player personnel director, basically at Notre Dame before all these player personnel offices at all these universities now. And Vinny was one of the, Lou let Vinny be one of the nine coaches or even eight coaches back in those days, and worked with less coaches on the field for his recruiting guru would be allowed to be on the road recruiting, because he was a 24/7 recruiter long before the rules, all these recruiting rules that came about in the late 90s to 2000 were referred to as Notre Dame rules, because Vinny Serrata is the one who not abused, but set the standard so high, everybody started bitching and moaning, and they changed the rules. You know, cell phones on the sideline, when they first started coming out, that you cannot communicate with kids on the sideline. That started as a Notre Dame rule. Only so many days out recruiting, whereas Vinny was out 7 days a week almost, 6 days a week times 10 weeks in the season. So the point is, he accumulated for Lou an enormous amount of talent for about a 6 or 7 year run. And that's why Notre Dame was so good. Lou came so close to having a true dynasty there, just missed a game or two here or there all the time. But the talent level was there. And then when Vinny took off, and the guy they put in charge to replace was not near the same guy, and the talent level dropped off. Now, there's academic standards that Notre Dame has that the other schools don't have. Not every kid in America who's a quality five-star, four-star athlete wants to go to Notre Dame. It's stuck off up in the South Bend. It's going to be gray all the time. It's going to be regimentation. It's going to be structure. It's going to be highly academic oriented. Not every kid wants to do that. So a lot of these schools in the SEC, down here in the South, the Sun Belt, I mean, you get tremendous athletes, and some of those guys don't even want to think about going to places like Notre Dame. And so that's why the schools today that are so dominant, you know, out are in the South. Ohio State was made to be an SEC team when Urban took the job. He started recruiting that team to be an SEC football team, and that's why they compete with them now, and it looks like one. Brian Kelly finally done a pretty good job of getting Notre Dame back now to where kind of was. It's still not going to be quite there, but they are doing a good job winning their 10, 11, 12, get a shot at the playoffs every now and then. But it's a tough go up there to say year in, year out, you're going to play in Alabama or be in Alabama, because you're not. You're just not going to get the marquee D lineman. You're not going to get, it appears, very many great quarterbacks. You are going to get great offensive linemen. You're going to get tight ends. You're going to occasionally get good running backs, big, tall receivers, but not speedy receivers. And but you get a culture kid there. You get a guy who's there for one reason, and that's life well beyond football.
Yeah, no doubt. Coaches, yeah, Coach Minter, you mentioned Ohio State. We'll wrap this up now. If you guys are comfortable doing so, you care to make a pick in the national championship game?
I wouldn't be afraid to take Ohio State. They're going to be a tough, you know, I'm an Alabama fan. I got friends on both staffs. I don't really have a dog in the fight. I'd be happy if Ryan won his first, and I'd be happy if Nick won his seventh. And I'm a fan of Sharks and what they're doing on offense down there. They're lighting it up. I think it's a classic matchup. I really do. And it's not going to be a blowout on either side. It's going to be a tough, hard-nosed physical game.
Coach Bustle?
If you made me put money on it, I'm putting it on Coach Saban. But I'm going to kind of – I'd like to see Ohio State just kind of change – you know, somebody new for the team. I mean, I think I like both teams. But like I said, if I was having to put my next house payment on there, I'd have to put it on Alabama. But I'm not. I'm going to pull for Ohio State here. But.
Yeah.
Before the two semifinal games, guys, I was going to pick Alabama all the way. But after the highlights of that Ohio State-Clemson game, it kind of turned my – I'm glad I'm not a betting man, because I would have said Alabama easily, but now – I'm starting to think that maybe Ohio State can win it. I really do.
Yeah, I think Ohio State can win it. I think they look really good against Clemson. I think they had payback on their mind a bit against Clemson. I just think playing 11 SEC games in a row like Alabama did is going to get you ready for anything. And, you know, they obviously handled Notre Dame, or 10, however many they played in a row, and then handled Notre Dame. I think Alabama wins another one.
Another thing, guys, we can talk all night, but I think Ohio State is fresher than Alabama. I really do. I think they've taken less, only playing seven games is to their advantage. I really do.
Yep, probably.
I just think it's great to see Alabama running an open offense and Kirk Keys, and he's done a great job up there. And it's great to see. I always wonder what would happen if they start doing that type of athlete they get.
Good. It's going to be interesting to see. Coaches, thank you so much for being on with us. It means a lot. And, again, I'm very, as I said at the top of the show, I'm just happy that we have a national championship game to talk about. It's not East Carolina, so I don't have a team, you know, to pull for, so I guess we can be more objective than that. But thank you so much for being on. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out on Monday night.
Well, we appreciate you having me on. Enjoy. Rick, it was great seeing you.
You bet. Appreciate it, Rick. Yourself, happy birthday again. So, appreciate it, fellas. Thanks so much.
No problem. All right. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it very much. Good night. All right, guys. Wow. Great show there. Two great coaches we thank a lot of and coming on with us. It's great to have them back. And again, it'd be nice to have our East Carolina Pirates in the national championship, but
you know what, Bubba or Dave, I'd be happy with the Myrtle Beach Bowl at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, national championship is a pipe dream. I mean, let's just get to a bowl. And I think we will. I will be shocked year three, Coach Houston, with the players he's got coming back, the way we were playing football at the end of the year. I will genuinely be shocked if we're not bowling at the end of next year.
Yeah, I said year three, and you guys know that the coaches, you could see the bright spots this year. We could have easily been a bowl team this year.
Yep.
With Navy and Tulsa, so we're very, very close, and I think that
some things are falling into our lap for a change. It looks like maybe, you know, Marshall and a guy. I'm not saying this. I'm glad Doc got fired, but Marshall all of a sudden is going to have a brand new coaching staff, and you know, there's going to be some turmoil there the way Doc got let go. It ain't going to go smooth, whoever gets the job.
That's the rough and the
App State, you know, lost Tony Peterson unexpectedly. You know, they lost their offensive coordinator, and they're going to have a new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback as we open up with App State. And then, of course, South Carolina's got a brand new coaching staff. So that non-conference schedule might not be as daunting as it appears to be on paper.
Yeah, and then the last game of non-conference, Charleston Southern, you feel like you're definitely going to win that game.
Well, you bet. So,
yeah, so as easily you could be 2-2 or 3-1 without even really flinching. You have a chance to even be perfect in non-conference. But and then we'll see how the – it'll be interesting to see. Another thing, guys, we're definitely going to get out of here is about how the other teams are going to react to will seniors stay, will they not stay. That's going to be – interesting how that's handled in the transfer portal and grad transfers and all that. So we'll see how it all plays out, but had a great time and nice to be talking about football other than whatever's going on. Thanks for sure. Bubba, do you have some stuff you want to talk about?
Yeah, a couple other pieces of information. I know earlier, you know, we were talking about other running backs who had departed the program back early in the season. Darius Penix obviously battled a lot this year, losing his father early in the season prior to the Georgia State game. But he did make the decision to enter the transfer portal. So definitely want to wish the best to Darius as he moves on, and hopefully he'll be able to land somewhere and enjoy the remainder of his collegiate football career. And then also Byron Thweet, you know, special teams coordinator, outside linebackers and defensive ends coach. He had been on the defensive staff with Coach Trott and Coach Hansen, and he was a guy that really had a tie with those guys. So it wasn't a huge surprise, but it's not a move I had heard speculated, but he will not be retained and his contract will expire per Steve and I go with Toys Curlers on the end of March. And so we're attempting to fill that position. And from what I'm hearing, the special teams duties will be spread out amongst the staff.
And so we'll be hiring a new D-line coach then.
Defensive end and out the backers. But,
okay.
Roy Tesh was coaching the D-line. So I'm guessing that obviously – I'm sure Coach Harrell may have some ties with guys that have coached that position for him in the past, and Coach Houston as well.
Yeah, no doubt. It should be an easy position to fill. I would think, and I want to say about Penix. Penix thought he was going to be the starter coming in this year, was not, had a great attitude when he got on the field, tried to take advantage of his opportunities, you know, made some plays for us down the stretch too. Mm-hmm. I hate to see him go, honestly. I know with the amount of players coming back because of COVID, some players, we probably do need to trim the roster. And I'm sure that there was a discussion between him and Coach Houston. I know him and Coach Houston had a good relationship. Kind of wish he'd stay just because Penix has been around so long. He's a pirate. He's a kid that I'm not like, oh, well, good riddance or well, good luck or whatever. He's a kid that he has a good attitude and I think of as a pirate. So I kind of hate to see him go. Disappointed in some of our fans with some of the comments over on Pirate Radio's Facebook page. Hopefully he'll notice the majority were positive, saying good things about him and not worry about this couple of negative comments. But, you know, there are some kids like the kid from Arkansas that, you know, I'm like, you know, what a baby. Penix is not like that. Penix is a kid that always tried his hardest and had a good attitude. And so Rick, don't need the negative comments.
Not only that, but guys, just the very fact that the guy was literally on, you know, he came in during one of the worst times you ever could come in as a Pirate, and that's under Scotty Montgomery, and he stayed with us. He stayed with us through the thick and thin. And again, with the COVID, with all that, like you said, Kyle, with not knowing how much playing time you're going to have, I don't begrudge the guy at all, because he could have left after year one or two under, was it year one, I guess.
Well, he could have left four games into this year when he saw he wasn't going to be in save the year of eligibility. I mean, he saw four games into this year he wasn't going to be the featured back, and he would have saved a year of eligibility, and he didn't do that.
Well, this year didn't count anyway.
Well, true enough. Shut up, Bubba. True enough. But, you know, I'm comparing him to that clown from Arkansas. That's
the He's hating him.
Yeah. So, but Penix is a pirate, and nothing but the best to you, my friend. As long as you're not playing for an opponent of ours, I'll be cheering for you.
No doubt. And this is a case where I think that Coach Houston did the right thing by looking out for him. And if he wants playing time, that he can play somewhere else. And like you said, that very thing. Make sure it's not South Carolina, Appalachian State, one of the opponents coming up.
And I bet you this, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'd be willing to bet you if he doesn't get picked up by somebody, I bet you he'll be welcome back on the team, because you can do that.
Yes, you can. It's not like turning pro. Bubba, we got a big show tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, on Saturday, the Pirates will be hosting USF on 1 o'clock at Minji's. So we'll preview it tomorrow night. Jim Lauk, the USF play-by-play voice, longtime play-by-play voice, and he'll join us for the first 20 minutes or so, and then the last half hour to 40 minutes, and we'll be joined by a former East Carolina basketball coach, Mike Steele, who had the Minji's Steel Mill back in the late 80s and early 90s. So I'm very excited about that show. Coach Steele's a lot of fun.
Yes, he is. And good luck to our Pirates. 7-2 on the year. Very happy with the start. And we'll see how that plays out on Saturday for sure. All right. For Coach Minner and Bustle and Bubba and Kyle, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. As always, go Pirates. Hey, what's up?